Well, good evening, everybody. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thanks very much for tuning in. We have some good news tonight for our Sirius XM truth seekers. On the XM side, we are live all 3 hours now on both Sirius Left Channel 145 and XM Channel 167. Up until tonight, XM had been carrying only the second 2 hours of the program. So we're now on XM 9 to midnight, and of course continuing on Sirius 9 to midnight Eastern Time. And thanks to the the program director over there, Dave Gorab, for making that happen. I can imagine a lot of people listening on XM would tune in at the top of the second hour and hear me say something to the effect of, "Now, where were we?" or "Welcome back." So anyway, thanks to XM. We are now on all 3 hours. One of the so much stuff happening. Are you ready to go nuts yet? I get a sense a lot of people are just deciding to kind of tune out politics. I get the feeling that a lot of liberals or progressives, not in the in media, or not the writers, the columnists. And probably not the people, the handful of people left who still do progressive talk radio, but the people who would normally identify themselves in the public as being either progressive and or liberal, I get a sense that a lot of these people have had enough. After 8 years of struggling, They see Barack Obama's presidency as the capstone, and now there's no reason to continue to struggle, to continue the fight, or continue to talk amongst ourselves. That is a big mistake. That's a terrible mistake. One of the quickest examples of that, a piece of evidence that I came across today in an email. A radio station in Washington, D.C. that heretofore had carried progressive programming, including some of the shining lights in progressive radio and a couple of jerks. But they've dropped it. They've decided in Washington, D.C., there will no longer be any liberal or progressive radio, talk radio programming. Zero. The station is switching to business news. Or business talk or something. Now, the station manager in the email I got, I was not on that station, by the way, or else, if had our program been on there, it would have stayed. No, never mind. But the station manager is quoted in the email that was sent to me as saying they had to make the change because the listenership dropped to zero. The liberals, the progressives. According to their most recent ratings book. Their most recent ratings book would have been October, November, December. And we are in the winter book now. That means nothing. Nobody cares a damn about the winter book. But if in October, November, and December their listenership fell to zero, the way they're explaining it is saying, well, it's because Obama won the presidency, so a lot of listeners feel the struggle is over. You know, that's a shame. A, I don't believe them. I don't believe the station management. B, I do believe that the listenership probably took a nosedive. And probably because the programming was not promoted. Now, I don't know, but I would be willing to bet, based on past experience, that the city of Washington, D.C. was not plastered with billboards talking about radio stations such and such, where you can hear Tom Hartman, Randy Rhodes, and whoever else was on that that station. Why do I guess that? Because I have worked at enough stations in enough markets to realize that liberal talk is and progressive talk is simply not, it's not promoted. It's not advertised. Why that is, I don't know. I still don't get it. The country has absolutely repudiated right-wing politics, right-wingers in general, the Republican Party. But, of course, the Republican Party is right-wing. In two congressional elections now, and the presidency, the American public has said no. The majority of Americans. Now, granted, somehow, unbelievably, 50 million people wanted more of the same treatment that they got from Bush and Cheney. I can't get my mind around that. That's when I get real depressed. You know, if it were only 20 million or 10 million or even 30 million, okay. But how many people voted for the Republican ticket? 56 million? Was that what it is? 54, 55, 56 million. I cannot understand that. The only way I can understand it, well, I'll tell you what. Post it at MikeMalloy.com in the place where you normally find my little mini blog on some days. I don't write it every day. I put up a link from an essay that I think should be required reading. For everyone except, well, everyone including, I should say, the people who voted Republican last election. It's worth the read. It's worth the read. So the struggle goes on in terms of media. I watched part of the press conference today. What's his name? Gibbs? Robert Gibbs? Is he the press secretary? And I watched, you know, my two favorite monkeys, Chuck Todd from NBC and Ed Henry from CNN. These two guys just crack me up. During the Reagan-Bush reign of terror, these two guys were like little warts on a frog's ass. They just sat there very quietly. If they ever did raise their voices, I'm not talking about in the press room, I'm talking about when they would do their bits on camera. If they ever did raise their voices about the Bush crime family, it was never to challenge anything or to be outraged. It was the usual get-along, go-along. But now Ed Henry and Chuck Todd have become bulldogs. Bulldogs, I tell you. The target today was Tom Daschle's tax problem. It's astonishing, just astonishing. During 8 years of open, defiant criminal activity, these two now crack White House reporters never once had the courage or respect for their profession to openly challenge some of the Bush press flacks who would stand there day after day and lie through their goddamn teeth. So here you have Gibbs, this press secretary, who stands there now day after day, what's he been up there, a week, and tells the truth. And these guys, oh, Tom Daschle, what about his taxes? Holy Christ, he didn't pay his taxes, Robert. Well, he did pay his taxes, but that's not the point. The point was watching these two young studs, these two go-getters. Chuck Todd, who was recently made White House correspondent for NBC, which is kind of like being made a cardinal in the Roman Catholic Church. And Ed Henry, who is just this kind of sweet-faced young thing at CNN. And I just wonder where these guys were with their bulldoggery when Bush was president.
I'm so carefree with a joyless heart. Then sometimes again it seems all I have is worry. Then you finally see my mother's hand.
And now, a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
You know, my favorite horror flick is Wizard of Oz, Judy Garland movie. I make a lot of references to that. That's how the Flying Monkey Rite originated. Excuse me. If this bronchitis has been a bitch, it's either bronchitis or lung cancer. I'm hoping it's the bronchitis. We'll see though, won't we? I make a lot of references to the Wizard of Oz, and if you'll remember in that movie towards the end, when all they had to do to the Wicked Witch of the West was toss water on her. And she died. She disappeared. But the flying monkeys didn't. Remember her minions, the ones who went and got Dorothy and her little dog, too, and brought them to the Wicked Witch. And I think that's where we are right now in this country where it concerns progressive talk, liberal talk. A lot of people may think just because Bush and Cheney are off the scene, politically dead, that there's really nothing to worry about. The game was won. No. The game has not been won at all. As a matter of fact, if you take a look at this first week or so of the Obama administration, take a look at the Nazi-like regimentation of the Republicans. Have you ever seen anything like that? Huh? I'm serious. Even the Democrats, who have been in the wilderness for so long, politically speaking, legislatively speaking, even they are willing to join with the flying monkeys and vote against their own president. It's astonishing. But that's what's been going on, and I have a feeling it's going to continue. Barack Obama has a definite agenda that he's trying to get done, although he's crapping out, as they say on the gaming tables. He's crapping out on so many issues that most of us thought were ironclad for him. He also is really coming through on overturning Bush directives. He's doing great where it concerned the royal orders of the Bush crime family, the diktats, executive orders that had nothing to do with the legislative branch. Obama has been good on that, overturning them, reversing them. Oh, and by the way, before you say that Obama has authorized a continuation of rendition for torture, you need to dig a little bit deeper. I got a bunch of emails from people today that said, hey, he does, you know, he's going to continue it. And it's all based on a story in the L.A. Times over the past couple of days. Turns out the story in the L.A. Times, the L.A. Times may have been punked on this one. So do your research. Go beyond the L.A. Times. Buzzflash, or is it Democratic Underground? A couple of places have rawstory.com. Several websites are carrying articles that are in direct rebuttal to that. But anyway, I digress. The Republicans are going to continue this assault on democracy. That's one thing about Republicans. It doesn't make any difference if they've been reduced. If after the next round of elections in 2010, if they're reduced to 30 seats in the Senate, for example, they will continue. They're like dog. You've heard the story of dog in the manger. These are dogs that piss in the manger. Not only do they lay in the manger and they won't get out. All right, pee in the manger. What did I say? Did I say a bad word for liberal radio? Oh, I'm sorry. They pee in the manger. So it's dog pee in the manger. Why can I say pee and not the other word? Huh?
I'm sorry, I'm not running the FCC today.
No, is that on the list?
I fear it may be. It's on the border. It's on the fringe of the list.
I've said pissed off 10 million times in the past 8 years.
But there's a verb and a noun.
Oh, I can use the verb.
I believe so.
But not the noun.
Exactly.
Can I do that with the F word?
No. It's like you can say suck the hind teat, but you can't go any farther with that noun.
Oh my God! How I'm so over this. I am just all right. Well, if the last,
thank God for XM and Sirius, huh?
If the last minute and a half was bleeped, it's because I used the P word. Oh, good God! Anyway, the Republicans continue their assault on representative government, and this will never stop. It will never stop because Republicans hate freedom. They hate democracy. They hate everything about this country. So all I'm saying is, please don't consider that, you know, the good guys won. The good guys have one of their own, perhaps, in the Oval Office and a majority in both houses of Congress. But the good guys have not won.
The man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, I got an email from Jamie here who writes, Mike, the D.C. station to which you refer, 1260 AM, was taken over by conservative Washington Redskins owner Dan Snyder over the summer. Snyder's companion conservative station in the D.C. market, 570 AM, will continue, along with yet another neocon station, WMAL. You see how this works, Truthseekers? If you took any one of those three stations, any one of those three, and stocked it with Hartman, Randy, Stephanie, me, who else? Sam Cedar, the ratings would go through the roof. But that's not going to happen. Jamie goes on, the program manager at 1260 AM used to run the recently defunct, also conservative station, 3WT, which claimed to air both progressive and conservative programming, but relegated Randy to a very weak transmitter more than an hour outside D.C. without the option of online streaming. You're correct in that the conservative stations are highly promoted, and are on strong signals. That has never been the case for progressive radio in the nation's capital. And, of course, the progressive station staff never replied to listeners. In fact, it was just in the past month or so that there was even a way to contact the station directly by email, phone, or snail mail. And so it goes. So it's on to XM or Sirius. Glad to hear the news about the airing of your full show. Take care, Jamie. His last name, or her last name, Jamie. That could be a man or a woman, couldn't it? Sorry if I got the gender wrong there. this, of course, is what the lie is in conservative circles, is that even though the country is left of center right now and would like to be governed left of center, the argument is there is no market for liberal talk. There is no market for it if nobody knows about it. If nobody knows about it, of course not. I mean, how many paintings did, as we call him here in the South, Van Gogh sell? Van Gogh. How many did Vincent Van Gogh sell? One. And that was to his what, brother-in-law? And why is that? Because he wasn't appreciated in his time, or because nobody knew what he was doing? Not that Randy Rhoads is Van Gogh or Tom Hartman is Rembrandt, but you know what I'm saying. Hartman, Randy, Sam, me, Stephanie, you put any one of us head-to-head with any of these right-wingers in any market in America, with the possible exception of a right-wing market like Phoenix. But you put us in a head-to-head. What? What are you laughing at?
Well, just because our home office is Phoenix.
Oh, I don't care about that. Phoenix is a...
We got the number one rated show in the air out there, baby.
It's a nest of reactionaries in Phoenix. They're snakes.
Well, they love you.
No, they don't. No, they don't. There are a few progressives or liberals out there. I mean, you know, even in hell, there are a few people that still get a glass of water occasionally, or so I've been told.
They must have gotten all the Arbitron diaries because they love this show.
Well, the point I'm making is you take anybody on the progressive left or the liberal left in doing talk radio and put them head-to-head against. And see, this has never happened. A few times it has happened. Hartman cleaned Rush's clock in, are you ready, Grand Rapids, Michigan? Randy cleaned Rush's clock. Are you ready? In... West Palm Beach. Doesn't the fat bastard live in Palm Beach? Yeah. Okay. I don't think I've ever been up against any of these people head to head. Because I've always worked at night.
Yeah, but you whipped Dr. Laura a new one.
Well, she doesn't count. She's a corpse eating freak who wants her son to go die in Iraq or something. But anytime you put a head-to-head situation, and this is what cracks me up. You know, I get a lot of emails from people who say, oh, well, nobody wants to hear you liberals. And what these people don't realize, what they bought into is the lie that Hannity and Limbaugh and the rest of these pigs put out there. But again, you know, I've been issuing this challenge for 10 years, and I have yet to have a radio station that would take me up on it. I have yet to have a network that will take me up on it. You take the four top-rated progressive liberal radio talk shows and put them in any market in America, with the exception of Phoenix, or San Diego, and run it against scum like Limbaugh, Hannity. Does Glenn Beck still do a radio show? Run it, Hugh Hewitt, you know, run it against people like that and watch what happens. But the challenge has always gone unanswered. Always. So, anyway. All that to tell you that the sound you hear if you listen to progressive or liberal talk are doors closing at various stations around the country. They let us in for a little while, but now they're going to shut the doors again because of the Obama administration. He's perceived to be a liberal. mainly what these right-wingers don't want is the hammer to come down on them where it concerns the theft and sneakiness and lies and deceit that they are that they're so good at. The right-wingers who buy radio stations, the Christian right is especially funky. But the non-Christian right-wingers who buy these radio stations cannot tolerate dissent or a differing opinion. They can't do it. A differing opinion makes their heads go boing, 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 boing. They can't handle it. And that is because of what I said millions of times. Republicans at bottom are cowards. Every single one of them is a coward. So if you get a chance to support a liberal talk someplace, you might want to do it. Or not. You know, it's up to you. It's entirely up to you. But we've been saying this for 15 years, 20 years. You know, if you want to see the marketplace be reduced to a bunch of braying idiots screaming, spewing right-wing garbage, just, you know, don't support liberal talk. And by God, a lot of people went right along with that. So here you are. Here's your present. Now, I'm not talking about you folks listening to this program tonight. God knows you've tried. And, you know, the game's got to go on. And it will go on until the last station around the country says, well, we don't want any more dissenting opinion. We want, we were hoping Bush would bring fascism to America, but goddammit, he didn't do it. So we have to shut down dissenting voices until the next time we get a chance. So there, that's the end of that. Be careful. Be careful about that. A lot of talk about everybody in the economy. You notice that? Who are hurting. People getting laid off, homeowners that are upside down in their mortgage payments, working class, middle class, whatever term you use. I saw something, was it in the Sunday New York Times? Somebody even tried to write a piece about how tough the multi-millionaires are having it. You know, houses on this island off the coast of Miami that sold for $30 million are down to $20 million. Oh, son of a bitch, there goes my investment. You know, that sort of thing. Except for one group. One group has not been mentioned, and that's poor people. Poor people. People who are on welfare. And that is kind of expected, given that right-wing talk radio and right-wing talk television don't mention this. Never. You know, poor people, which is a huge, huge chunk of the U.S. population. Poverty is at what level? If it's at 10%, that's 30 million people. But it's never mentioned. Bill Clinton probably did more damage to poor people than any Republican president ever did. And that's when he signed the so-called welfare reform bill back in 1996. It was put together by a Republican Congress. And it was another in the series of attempts, successful attempts, at undoing the Roosevelt-era social compact that tried to give Americans of all income and race cultural backgrounds an even shot. And Republicans hate that, of course. Conservatives, Nazis hate that. Fascists hate that. That's not allowed. So Bill Clinton, being the best Republican president this country could ever hope for, signed it. And it was called they changed it to Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, TANF. And nobody is paying attention in media to what is happening to poor people. We'll focus on it when we come back. Stay with us.
ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, Jamie, who wrote me about the situation in D.C., is a woman! She's not a guy. Thanks, Jamie. Poor people. I mean, folks that for certain times of their life used to wind up on welfare. And granted, a lot of people wound up on welfare and stayed there. And no, that shouldn't have happened. But I think there were myriad reasons for that, and not the least of which was welfare departments would lose people. Just their files just didn't exist, and folks would just continue to be on the welfare rolls when there was no reason for it. And I'm the first to admit that there are a lot of people who used to get welfare who had no business getting welfare. They were freeloaders and parasites. But you can't, you can't wait till everybody's asleep. If there's a rat in the house, you can't wait till everybody's asleep and then come in with carbon monoxide and douse the house and to kill the rat. You wake up in the morning, everybody's dead, right? Huh? But the point was, as the New York Times reported the other day, with the unemployment just going off the chart, the worst economic crisis in decades, 18 states have cut their welfare rolls in the past few months. And nationally, the number of people receiving cash assistance remained at or near the lowest in more than 40 years. Now, you don't have to be a weatherman to know which way the wind blows, and you also don't have to be a genius to take a look at what is going on out there where it concerns layoffs. I have no earthly idea how long Novam Radio is going to be in business. Macy's. Macy's, for God's sake. How many did they lay off today? Or 7,000? Was it 7,000? excuse me. People are being laid off, and the unemployment offices are just overwhelmed. Everybody's supposed to go get another job. Doing what? It used to be when you lost your $80,000 a year manufacturing job or IT job because it was either outsourced or they brought in somebody from India or China who would do it for $20,000. Your fallback position was fast food or something. That's gone. There's just retail sales gone. And in listening to the news tonight, when they talked about this massive layoff that targets Macy's now, the reason is because nobody's buying anything at Macy's, regardless of the sales and the discounts, the deep discounts, 70% off, 80% off. God damn, we'll give it to you free. Nobody is going to Macy's. So people get laid off. So what does that do? Does that increase the people who will now go to Macy's and buy stuff? No. It becomes like some kind of a pyramid scheme. The more people that are laid off, the fewer people there are with disposable income to go to Macy's, which means more people will be laid off, which results in fewer people. You see how that goes. I don't know who's pushing the buttons, who's running things. It's madness. The New York Times says the trends, the poverty trends, people being thrown off welfare, based on an analysis of new state data collected by the New York Times, raise questions. The trends raise questions about how well a revamped welfare system is responding to growing hardships. Well, duh. This is what liberals and progressives said 10 years ago, 12 years ago, when Clinton, the miserable son of a bitch that he was, and he was. No, we didn't lose a single American soldier during 8 years of the Clinton administration. We killed a lot of people, but we didn't lose a soldier. Yes, he managed to pump up the tech industry, or allowed to be pumped up, to the point where a lot of people made money, and then it crashed, and a lot of people lost their ass, and their elbows, and their arms, and their feet, and everything. Clinton was an illusionist. You know he was, as well as I do. He was a Republican. He was a Republican down to his heart, down, even to the fact that he cheated on his wife. complete Republican, and lied about it. So in signing the Welfare Reform Act, so-called, it wasn't welfare reform. They didn't reform, you know, break the word down, reform. They didn't reform welfare. They killed it. And in the process of killing it, liberals and progressives said, look, with the economy in the shape it's in right now, I think when that happened, the unemployment rate was like below 3%, 2.8, 2.9, which is almost, in a filthy capitalistic system, that's considered full employment. Never mind the 3%. You're not there, so what do you care, right? The progressives and the liberals said, okay, that may work now, but what happens when we hit a recession or a depression? And it will happen again. The progressives and the liberals knew it would happen again. Why? Because we're much smarter than Republicans and conservatives. We understand trends. We know that in a capitalist society, that is self-limiting by definition, that eventually the house of cards that capitalism builds crashes down. Holy Christ, how many times does that have to happen before it sinks in?
This may not be the best economic system,
but it had to happen again. So here we are. We have poor people now. I mean, real poor people. People are losing their houses. People who are losing everything. And there's no place to go. Now, think about this during the break. What are those people going to do? What are they going to do? They're married, or they have a partner. They have kids. They're black and white, gay and straight. Some of them are educated, some of them are not. What are they going to do? What happens when that number reaches 20 million, 30 million, 40 million, 50 million? What's going to happen? Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Interesting email here from David in L.A. who writes, Mike, love your show. Listen to you on KTLK in L.A. And I can truly relate to your take on everything, especially when you refer to our former president as the Bush crime family. I had heard someone suggest the idea that Medicare should become health care that would be available to everyone. What a wonderful and novel idea. What do you think about the idea of a national lottery where all the incoming money goes into only Social Security and the winner wins both a good health care plan and a pension for life? Ideally, we want this for everyone. And in the meantime, maybe this could be one way to get things started. Am I crazy for having such an idea? I guess as a default position, a national lottery probably would be a good idea to fund. I don't know about Social Security, but maybe healthcare. Well, maybe both. I don't know anymore. In order to buy lottery tickets, you have to have some kind of income. And historically, the people who buy lottery tickets are people who are not, you know, the brightest bulbs in the marquee, so to speak. Yeah, I occasionally buy one, but I'm not the brightest bulb in the marquee either. welfare recipients. When the Republican Congress wrote and passed this welfare reform bill, and Clinton signed it, it became, to social scientists, one of the most closely watched social experiments in modern history. And what replaced it was temporary assistance for needy families, TANF. And it's mainly a cash welfare program for families with children. And nationally, for the 12 months ending October 2008, the people on that plan inched up a fraction of 1%. A fraction of 1%. Think about the job losses. How many jobs were lost in 2008? This went up a fraction of 1%. Doesn't say what the fraction is. A fourth of 1%? Doesn't say. The program, TANF, which mostly serves single mothers, ended, when Clinton signed it, it ended a 60-year entitlement to cash aid, replacing it with time limits, work requirements, giving states latitude to discourage people from joining the welfare rolls. It was widely praised in the boom years, and liberals and progressives and, oh, let's call them skeptics, warned that it would fail when times turned tough. Well, guess what? Even some of the program's staunchest defenders are alarmed. Ron Haskins, a former Republican congressional aide who helped write the law in 1996, said, quote, there is ample reason to be concerned here. The overall structure is not working the way it was designed to work. Really? We would expect, he says, just on the face of it, that when a deep recession happens, people could go back on welfare, end quote. He goes on to say, when we started this, Democratic and Republican governors alike said, we know what's best for our state. We're not going to let people starve. And now, he says, that the chips are down and unemployment is going up. Most states are not doing enough to help families get back on the rolls, end quote. That's Ron Haskins, former Republican congressional aide who helped write this bill that Clinton signed. Well, the reason that states are not doing enough to help families get back on the welfare rolls is because of the 50 states, 44 of them are on the verge of running out of money. That's why. Now, I realize that every 10 years or 15 or 20 years or whatever it is, people in Congress have to reinvent the same wheel over and over and over again. Look, the capitalistic system not only produces, but demands an underclass of poor people. And the larger the society that is dealing with capitalism, the larger the underclass. Hello, 2 + 2 = 4. This is not hard stuff. It really isn't. Capitalism is self-limiting on the one hand. On the other hand, and this is the catch, it demands an ever-expanding base of operations. It's got to continue to suck up natural resources and labor resources. It has to continue to, those two things, natural resources and labor resources, are finite. Eventually it stops. It hits a brick wall. And since capitalism is designed by definition to keep a certain percentage in grinding poverty, if not underemployment and unemployment. That's what it is. It's capitalism, not socialism. It's not peopleism. It's not human lifeism. It's capitalism. And it's only concerned about capital, money. Well, guess what? The big time capitalists, Ponzi operators and the casino operators on this filthy, degenerate hole called Wall Street and the banking industry. They knew this long before you and I ever did, because they are, not because they're smarter, but because they sit at the controls of the machine, so they could see, oh God, look, we're heading for a brick wall. No, it's not a brick wall. It's a cliff. Oh, what's on the other side of the cliff? An abyss. What's at the bottom of the abyss? Hell. Oh, what are we going to do? Pump it up. Steal as much as we can. We're heading for the abyss. And they did. And here we are. So, I've been listening to people a lot smarter than me about what the probabilities are, not possibilities, probabilities of chaos in the society. And I have to say, I don't like what I hear at all. It scares me. I'm not easily scared. And this scares me because what I hear is societal breakdown. What I hear is militaristic response internally. What I hear is authoritarian clamps putting down on. What I hear are food riots. Talk about food riots. People who have been pushed to the absolute limit. They lost their job, their house, maybe their vehicle, their means of obtaining credit, their credit cards, their credit rating. What are they going to do? These are people who have been part of the cog, like me, like you, in the capitalist machine. We do what we're supposed to do. We didn't ask to be here. We were born here. I guess born into it. I guess a lot of people come here and say, "Oh, I want part of that capitalism." Really? Okay. Have at it. Here it is. Take a big bite. But I get scared. I mean, literally scared about what's going to happen. And to the cowardly little right-wingers who listen to this program, I got a newsflash for you. Rush Limbaugh is not going to save your ass, okay? When the riots hit the streets, Limbaugh will head for his castle in Singapore or wherever he's got a castle. Trust me. Limbaugh uses you. He works you like a yo-yo. But I digress. I get worried. When Clinton pledged to end welfare as we know it, according to Jason DeParle writing at the New York Times, the new program brought furious protests from people who predicted the poor would suffer. Looks like those people were right. Stick around, I'm Mike Malloy.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It's 21 past the hour. Oh, people on the phone waiting to talk. All right, let's do that. After the break here at the bottom of the hour, there's an essay that I've got to share with you because I think it is very, very, very important. All right, to your phone calls. Gary calling from Lexington, Kentucky, listening on XM. Hey, Gary. Hi, Gary. All right, let's put Gary on hold, see if we can get him back. Josh is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on 92.1 The Mic. Is that right, Josh?
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Okay, I'm a little distressed. I here I was thinking that Republican economic policies have been proven just disastrous failures over the last 8 years. Mm-hmm. Tax cuts, everything. And, you know, I see this news that Obama is going to put Republican Senator Judd Gregg as Commerce Secretary. This guy's favorite privatizing Social Security. He's vehemently pro-life. He's been a dishonest actor in the Senate, passing, you know, we will not hurt our troops sort of language.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand this sort of political lie, that this accepted political lie that, you know, we need these Republican ideas. You know, it has to be this balance of conservatism and liberalism. I don't understand why we can't just say, no, these policies have failed. We're going to replace them and fix things. I think this is called triangulation. And if I wanted another Clinton triangulating in the White House, I would have voted for one.
Is it that, or is it the inexperience let's just call it inexperience of Barack Obama. Keep in mind, he is not getting the kind of support from the Democrats and the media that George Bush got and the Nazis got from the Republicans and the media. Obama is I think, finding out that more than just Rush Limbaugh want to see him fail. And the people who want to see him fail are people who have a lot of clout. They have media. They're members of his own party who can't stand the fact that a black man is now the president of the United States. Come on, let's be real. We understand about the Democratic Party. The Republican Party is entirely racist, aside from Michael Steele being made the head of the RNC. Michael Steele is what he is. But I don't think it's a deliberate something as politically sophisticated as triangulation, which was the Bill Clinton label stamped all over it.
I don't know. It really reminds me of what you were talking about before about liberal talk radio not getting an audience. I just think that there is this sort of zombie mentality in Washington, D.C. that Republican ideas are sort of the default wise things to do, and that, you know, that there has to be, you know, that liberal ideas on their own can't stand on their own, and that there's no audience and there's no support for them. It's this sort of very internalized self-doubt that is almost a disease in the Democratic Party. I just don't understand.
I don't either. And it's fatal. If that's the truth, it is fatal. I don't think there's any doubt about it. Josh, thanks for checking in. Okay. All right. Take care. And now I'm getting a couple of people in the past couple of minutes have emailed this to me that according to the Inter-Press Service, CENTCOM Commander General David Petraeus, you know, the guy that flipped the coin at the Super Bowl yesterday, supported by Defense Secretary Robert Gates, tried to convince Barack Obama that he had to back down from his campaign pledge to withdraw all U.S. combat troops from Iraq within 16 months at a meeting in the Oval Office January 21st. Obama informed Gates, Petraeus, and the Joint Chiefs Chairman, Admiral Mike Mullen, that Obama wasn't convinced, and that he wanted Gates and the military leaders to come back quickly with a detailed 16-month plan. That's according to two sources who have talked with participants in the meeting. Obama's decision to override Petraeus' recommendation has not ended the conflict between the president and senior military officers over troop withdrawal, however. There are indications that Petraeus and his allies in the military and the Pentagon, including General Ray Odierno, now the top commander in Iraq, already have begun to try to pressure Obama to change his withdrawal policy. A network of senior military officers is also reported to be preparing to support Petraeus and Odierno by mobilizing public opinion against Obama's decision. Petraeus was visibly unhappy when he left the Oval Office. According to one of the sources, a White House staffer present at the meeting was quoted by the sources saying, quote, Petraeus made the mistake of thinking he was still dealing with George Bush instead of with Barack Obama. End quote. Well, that doesn't exactly thrill me, that bit of news. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Your host for a Pience, Friance future, it's Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. All right. This is kind of lengthy, but I think it deserves an airing on this program. It's written by Chris Hedges. Most of you are familiar with his writing and who he is. And the title is It's Not Going to Be Okay. Chris writes, "The daily bleeding of thousands of jobs will soon turn our economic crisis into a political crisis. The street protests, strikes, and riots that have rattled France, Turkey, Greece, Ukraine, Russia, Latvia, Lithuania, Bulgaria, and Iceland will descend on us. It's only a matter of time, and not much time. When things start to go sour, when Barack Obama is exposed as a mortal waving a sword at a tidal wave, the United States could plunge into a long period of precarious social instability. At no period in American history has our democracy been in such peril, or has the possibility of totalitarianism been as real. Our way of life is over. Our profligate consumption is finished. Our children will never have the standard of living we had, and poverty and despair will sweep across the landscape like a plague. This is the bleak future. There is nothing President Obama can do to stop it. It has been decades in the making. It cannot be undone with $1 trillion or $2 trillion in bailout money. Our empire is dying. Our economy has collapsed. How will we cope with our decline? Will we cling to the absurd dreams of a superpower and a glorious tomorrow, or will we responsibly face our stark new limitations? Will we heed those who are sober and rational, those who speak of a new simplicity and humility, or will we follow the demagogues and charlatans who rise up out of the slime in moments of crisis to offer fantastic visions? Will we radically transform our system to one that protects the ordinary citizen and fosters the common good, that defies the corporate state, or will we employ the brutality and technology of our internal security and surveillance apparatus to crush all dissent? We won't have to wait long to find out. There are a few isolated individuals who saw it coming. The political philosophers Sheldon Wolin, John Ralston Saul, and Andrew Bakevich, as well as writers such as Noam Chomsky, Chalmers Johnson, David Corton, and Naomi Klein, along with activists such as Bill McKibben and Ralph Nader, rang the alarm bells. They were largely ignored or ridiculed. Our corporate media and corporate universities proved, when we needed them most, intellectually and morally useless. Wolin, who taught political philosophy at the University of California in Berkeley and at Princeton, in his book Democracy Incorporated, uses the phrase inverted totalitarianism to describe our system of power. Inverted totalitarianism, unlike classical totalitarianism, does not revolve around a demagogue or charismatic leader. It finds its expression in the anonymity of the corporate state. It purports to cherish democracy, patriotism, and the Constitution while cynically manipulating internal levers to subvert and thwart democratic institutions. Political candidates are elected in popular votes by citizens, but they must raise staggering amounts of corporate funds to compete. They are beholden to armies of corporate lobbyists in Washington or state capitals who write the legislation. A corporate media controls nearly everything we read, watch, or hear, and imposes a bland uniformity of opinion, or diverts us with trivia and celebrity gossip. In classical totalitarian regimes, such as Nazi fascism or Soviet communism, economics was subordinate to politics. Wolin has written, quote, under inverted totalitarianism, the reverse is true. Economics dominates politics, and with that domination comes different forms of ruthlessness, end quote. I reached Professor Wolin, who is 86, by phone at his home about 25 miles north of San Francisco. He was a bombardier in the South Pacific during World War II and went to Harvard after the war to get his doctorate. Wolin has written classics such as Politics and Vision and Tocqueville Between Two Worlds. His newest book is one of the most important and prescient critiques to date of the American political system. He is also the author of a series of remarkable essays on Augustine of Hippo, Richard Hooker, David Hume, Martin Luther, John Calvin, Max Weber, Friedrich Nietzsche, Karl Marx, and John Dewey. His voice, however, has faded from public awareness because, as he told me, quote, it is harder and harder for people like me to get a public hearing, end quote. He said that publications such as the New York Review of Books, which often published his work a couple of decades ago, lost interest in his critiques of American capitalism, his warnings about the subversion of democratic institutions and the emergence of the corporate state. He does not hold out much hope for Obama. Wolin told me when I asked him about the new Obama administration, quote, the basic systems are going to stay in place. They're too powerful to be challenged. This is shown by the financial bailout. It does not bother with the structure at all. I don't think Obama can take on the kind of military establishment we have developed. This is not to say that I do not admire him. He is probably the most intelligent president we have had in decades. I think he is well-meaning, but he inherits a system of constraints that makes it very difficult to take on these major power configurations. I do not think he has the appetite for it in any ideological sense. The corporate structure is not going to be challenged. There has not been a word from him that would suggest an attempt to rethink the American imperium. End quote. Wolin argues that a failure to dismantle our vast and overextended imperial projects, coupled with the economic collapse, is likely to result in inverted totalitarianism. He said that without what he calls radical and drastic remedies, the response to mounting discontent and social unrest will probably lead to greater state control and repression. There will be, he warned, a huge, quote, expansion of government power, end quote. He went on to say, quote, our political culture has remained unhelpful in fostering a democratic consciousness. The political system and its operatives will not be constrained by popular discontent or uprisings, end quote. Wolin writes that in inverted totalitarianism, consumer goods and a comfortable standard of living, along with a vast entertainment industry that provides spectacles and diversions, keep the citizenry politically passive. I asked if the economic collapse and the steady decline in our standard of living might not, in fact, trigger classical totalitarianism. Could widespread frustration and poverty lead the working and middle classes to place their faith in demagogues, especially those from the Christian right? He answered, quote, I think that's perfectly possible. That was the experience of the 1930s. There wasn't just FDR. There was Huey Long and Father Coughlin. There were even more extreme movements, including the Klan. The extent to which those forces can be fed by the downturn and bleakness is a very real danger. It could become classical totalitarianism, end quote. He said the widespread political passivity is dangerous. It is often exploited by demagogues who pose as saviors and offer dreams of glory and salvation. He warned that, quote, the apoliticalness, even anti-politicalness, will be very powerful elements in taking us toward a radically dictatorial direction. It testifies to how thin the commitment to democracy is in the present circumstances. Democracy is not ascendant. It is not dominant. It is beleaguered. The extent to which young people have been drawn away from public concerns and given this extraordinary range of diversions makes it very likely they could then rally to a demagogue, end quote. Wolin lamented that the corporate state has successfully blocked any real debate about alternative forms of power. Corporations determine who gets heard and who does not, he said, and those who critique corporate power are given no place in the national dialogue. He said, quote, in the 1930s, there were all kinds of alternative understandings, from socialism to more extensive governmental involvement. There was a range of different approaches, but what I am struck by now is the narrow range within which palliatives are being modeled. We are supposed to work with the financial system, so the people who helped create the system are put in charge of the solution. There has to be some major effort to think outside the box, end quote. When I asked why we have not yet seen rioting or protests, he said, quote, the puzzle to me is the lack of social unrest, end quote. He said he worried that popular protests will be dismissed and ignored by the corporate media. This, he said, is what happened when tens of thousands protested the war in Iraq. This will permit the state to ruthlessly suppress local protests, as happened during the Democratic and Republican conventions. Anti-war protests in the 1960s gained momentum from their ability to spread across the country, he noted. This, he said, may not happen this time. He said, quote, the ways they can isolate protests and prevent it from becoming a contagion are formidable, end quote. He added, quote, my greatest fear is that the Obama administration will achieve relatively little in terms of structural change. They may at best keep the system going, but there is a growing pessimism. Every day we hear how much longer the recession will continue. They are already talking about beyond next year. The economic difficulties are more profound than we had guessed, and because of globalization, more difficult to deal with. All right, there's a little more. We'll finish it up after this break. It's about 10 before the hour. All right, finishing up this essay by Chris Hedges. He talked with Sheldon Wolin, political philosopher who is 86 years old, and he's been around. He was a bombardier in the South Pacific during World War II, went to Harvard, got his doctorate, and has written extensively on political philosophy. Back to Wolin speaking. Let me back up. He said, my greatest fear is that the Obama administration will achieve relatively little in terms of structural change. They may at best keep the system going, but there is a growing pessimism. Every day we hear how much longer the recession will continue. They're already talking about beyond next year. The economic difficulties are more profound than we had guessed, and because of globalization, more difficult to deal with. I wish the political establishment, the parties and leadership, would become more aware of the depths of the problem. They can't keep throwing money at this. They have to begin structural changes that involve a very different approach from a market economy. I don't think this will happen, end quote. And he went on, quote, I keep asking why and how and when this country became so conservative. This country once prided itself on its experimentation and flexibility. It has become rigid. It is probably the most conservative of all the advanced countries, end quote. The American left, he said, has crumbled. It sold out to a bankrupt Democratic Party, abandoned the working class, and has no ability to organize. Unions, he said, are a spent force. The universities are mills for corporate employees. The press churns out info entertainment or fatuous pundits. The left, he said, no longer has the capacity to be a counterweight to the corporate state. He said that if an extreme right gains momentum, there will probably be very little organized resistance. He said, quote, the left is amorphous. I despair over the left. Left parties may be small in number in Europe, but they are a coherent organization that keeps going. Here, except for Nader's efforts, we don't have that. We have a few voices here, a magazine there, and that's about it. It goes nowhere. End quote. Now you can find this at truthdig.com, truthdig.com. And the point, of course, that Sheldon Wolin is making when he talks about structural changes, you know as well as I do what he's talking about. He's talking about the end of not just predatory capitalism, but capitalism as an organizing economic principle in this country. It's run its course. It's gone. It's the only thing that's going to continue. This is why a lot of people are saying, Mike, please don't support the bailout, even though Obama wants it. And that's very true. It is true. I've been supporting it, but I've also been doing some reading that I should have done probably a long time ago, including Sheldon Wolin. Capitalism, American capitalism, has run its course, truth seekers. I mean, it really, really, really has. You disagree? Surely you don't disagree. The capitalists, period, took everything they could get and then moved everything offshore. It's gone. We don't even have the factories anymore. Those have been broken down and sold. The only thing that will save us is kind of a minimalist attitude in so many different areas, and we're just not capable of doing that. You know we're not. We've had five generations here of, three anyway, of unbridled consumerism. And, you know, that's 60, 70 years. There's nobody alive today that hasn't been saturated with consumerism. I'm not saying everybody has fallen victim to it. A lot of people have resisted and done fine, living off the grid or living a minimalist life. But capitalism itself, I mean, it's over, folks. It really is over. And what Wolin is talking about with Chris Hedges, when he talks about structural change, is ending corporatism / capitalism. It's over. There's only two roads to take now. Further down the corporatist road, which leads to, as he said, inverted totalitarianism that could flip and become totalitarianism, period. Or, even though this term is not mentioned, social democracy or democratic socialism. That's where we are. How are you going to explain that to your 12-year-old who's learning about the American system, American economic system, the American political system? How are you going to do that? I have no idea if I'm alive what I'm going to tell Molly when she's 12. I have no idea. Haven't a clue. And it's not, you know, this is not, oh, let's turn off Malloy. Oh, goddamn, he is so negative. Okay, goodbye. See ya. Adios. Au revoir. That's all right with me. That's certainly all right with me. If you want to bail, okay, there's the door. Don't let it hit you in the ass. You know, this is obvious to anyone except the ones who are willfully ignorant and willfully blind, which is an enormous number of Americans. The majority? Hell yes. Absolutely. The vast majority? Yes. What then, Malloy? What number? 85%? 90?
Yeah, but Barack Obama won by 6 percentage points.
I rest my case. We're going to take a break and come back and take some phone calls, if anybody's still left. Like I said, I don't blame you, man. If you bailed out and went to watch Entertainment Tonight, that's completely understandable. Completely understandable. If I weren't doing this program right now, I'd probably join you. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Okay, to your phone calls here in just a second. Just a couple of emails here. This is from the Bear, who writes, here's a paranoid thought. However, given the last 8 years, quite possible in this bizarre version of lizard politics, perhaps the media's refusal to cover the growing legions of those thrown into poverty are so that when they disappear and are hauled off to Kellogg Brown Root work camps, no one will question where they went. And then Bears includes a quote from Allen Ginsberg, follow your inner moonlight. Don't hide the madness. I love Allen Ginsberg. Harold writes, hi, Mike. On this morning's Morning Joe on MSNBC, they had something called the Obamameter. Obamameter, which was a device that measured Obama's broken campaign promises. I don't recall that show ever using a Bushometer. You are so right about the media wanting Obama to fail. It's already started, Harold. And Bruce in California sends in a quote from John Maynard Keynes that says, capitalism is the extraordinary belief that the nastiest of men, for the nastiest of motives, will somehow work for the benefit of all. Oh, my God. Watch this little shiny thing, America. You want one? Brr, brr, brr. You like that? All right, back to your phone calls or to your phone calls or something. Let's start with, who do we start with? Ron, who is calling from Ambler, PA, listening on Sirius. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I always feel stupid asking you. But, yeah, a couple things. I always have so much I want to say, and I don't know how to condense it, so I'm going to try to keep it brief. But I wanted to mention something about you were talking about TAMF. And, you know, the people, I work in that industry. I actually work here in Philadelphia for, you know, through one of the major universities in adult literacy. And I just wanted to tell you, it's the most despicable thing about the whole Clinton-era reform to the welfare system is how these jackals have gotten into it. And I'm not going to mention any names, but there are these private for-profit industries who are taking public money and running these programs. It makes me sick. You know what I mean?
It's like, oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
sure.
they have no compunction about taking our taxpayer monies to enrich themselves. This money that was slated to help people through, like, when, you know, our country was still had some sort of, like, altruistic, moralistic underpinnings, you know?
Right, right.
It just makes me sick.
Well, you know, one thing that you and I forgot, I probably forgot it before you did, is that capitalism was never designed to help people. The right wing will tell you that capitalism is the greatest system on earth for lifting people out of poverty. That is absolutely not true. The greatest system on earth for leading people out of poverty is democratic socialism.
Right.
Unless you're talking about the privileged few, and in some cases, the privileged few under a capitalistic system can be as high as 80% of the entire number of people for a while. Eventually, it collapses because capitalism has at its foundation a poison pill that eventually explodes and the whole damn system comes down. You don't have to be an economist to understand that. I mean, hell, I don't know when that became clear to me. I don't know when it became clear to you, but capitalism does not work for the greatest number of people over the greatest period of time. It just doesn't work.
Well, if you have to rely upon progress or profit, eventually you're going to reach a ceiling. Because, you know, despite the fact that maybe like a human construction, you know, like something men dream up as a way to order the chaos or whatever. I mean, what is it, Montesquieu? One of my favorite Montesquieu quotes. Order is the dream of man. Chaos is the law of nature. I mean, you know, that's just the way things are. You know, you get these people who want to put a fix on reality, you know, and say, you know, this is the way it's going to be. It's crazy. And just one last thing, and I'll shut up. But it's, I don't know where the outrage is. I look around at people. I ride in a home on a train. I'm looking at people, you know, and they're just busy with their iPods and their cell phones, and it's like a fetish, man. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at it. I'm like, oh, geez, you know, it's, don't do that in public, you know. And it's just this. Where? They don't care. They don't freaking care.
Yeah, as Wolin pointed out in this essay that Chris Hedges wrote. We have been anesthetized. We've been hypnotized by the things, by the gym cracks and doodads and electronic wizardry, and it's all entertainment. In the meantime, we're slowly sinking. But you're right. The zombification of most of America has occurred. I mean, I wonder the same thing. Ron, where's the outrage? Why are people not just absolutely going bonkers?
I don't know. It makes me sad as hell. If I talk about it too much, I might start crying, you know, because it's like, I love my country.
Right.
You know, and I love the ideals, and we have to fight for them. I mean, you know, they don't just pop up like, you know,
yeah.
You know, whatever. But
I feel the same way. But I'll tell you what emotion has to surface at some point, and that's outrage. And then
absolutely.
It has to become rage. But
concerted and smart. You're always quoting Saul Alinsky. You have to be smart about it.
That's true.
And you have to really kind of like get to the point to where like some of the TAMF clients I deal with,
mm-hmm.
these people have had crappy lives.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, and I've done what I've done work wise is because, you know, after 8 years of the Bush administration, my wife was like going, you know, we're going to put you in a rubber room, but you know, I had to do something, you know, to kind of like a spit in the face of the mean,
mm-hmm.
selfish SOBs. You know, I go down and I work with people who have had some pretty crappy lives, and I try to instill them with just a little bit of hope. Mm-hmm. And I tell them always, I say, you know what? Your independence is my independence. Mm-hmm. Your ability to stand on your feet and to work, you know, to support yourself and support your ideas and to go back to school are going to protect the ideals that I hold dear. They're going to mm-hmm. protect them for my kids and your kids. And I tell them that. I say, you know what? I tell them, the reason why you're here is because if you haven't noticed, there's been a sea change in the United States. People don't give a damn about you anymore.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I say, you know, get on your feet and help me fight.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I tell them. You know, and they look at me like I'm a freak, but, you know, that's all right.
Keep saying it, Ron. Keep saying it. Keep saying it. Keep throwing the stone into the pond, and the ripples keep going out. Keep doing it, man. Just keep doing it, right?
Well, it's the only way I keep myself from going completely bonkers. So. All right.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for giving me as much time.
Sure. Thanks, Ron. Take care.
Good night.
All right, you too. Take care. Yeah, unfocused or diffused rage does nothing except get you tear gassed, but focused anger, focused rage. And I don't know, there may have to be, remember what Mao unleashed on China. I'm not suggesting that we need the same kind of psycho unleashing the same kind of unbridled rage on this country as Mao unleashed on China, but the Cultural Revolution where everything had to be destroyed. They were after history. I don't think history should be destroyed. But something, call it creative destruction, refer to Naomi Klein, refer to people much more well-versed in this than I or you, about what creative destruction is. And, you know, does that hold the does that hold the answer?
Past the reefs of greed through the squalls of
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Back to your phone calls here. Ron is calling for from Michigan, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Ron, welcome to the program.
Mr. Malloy.
Hey.
I wanted to congratulate you on your Barack Obama victory. I'm one of the coward Republicans, as you refer to, that does listen to your show and enjoys listening to it. But I wanted to tell you that I am a poor Republican. I guess if you can call me a Republican, because I'm not what you would call a hardcore Republican. But I have a camp in the woods that's by a river. I have cable TV. I even have a cell phone. I don't know what country in America where somebody that's making lucky that making $20,000 a year that could be able to afford to accomplish all that. I have to pinch my pennies. I have to work hard, and I have to save every dime that I have. But I do have that, and I feel like I lived the life of a millionaire, to be completely honest with you, and I love this country.
Why do you identify yourself as a Republican? You're not a Republican.
Just because I don't make much money, I'm not a Republican. Of course I'm a Republican.
Well, define Republican for me.
I voted for John McCain.
No. Define Republican for me.
I'm pro-life, although I do see a lot of points.
What do you mean? What do you mean pro-life? You're against war?
If not at all possible, definitely.
If at all possible.
Yeah.
So are you anti-death penalty?
No, I do not believe in.
Okay, then you're not. Then you're not pro-life, right? If you are going to hedge your answer when I ask you, are you anti-war? And your answer is, what did you say?
If at all possible.
If at all possible.
I would think any
tell
logical
me,
person.
Right, wait. Don't go nuts on me. Tell me a war that the United States has been involved in. Let's pick an historical starting point. Let's say since World War II. Tell me a war we've been involved in that was not a war of aggression on our part.
Well, all wars were aggression.
Come on. Don't do that.
Okay.
Look, either you're going to be intellectually honest with me or I'm going to move on to the next call. Tell me a war. You said you're anti-war or you believe in
we
war when necessary.
We haven't had a war. We've always been aggressive in every war that we've ever been
okay,
in.
So what are you saying then when you say you're pro-life? You're not pro-life. You're pro-death.
No. I am not.
Well, okay. I'm only using your definitions. I'm sorry. You live by a river and don't have a cell phone or whatever the hell you said.
No, I do have a cell phone.
Okay,
I don't know too many countries with people making the amount of money
okay,
that
wait,
I do.
Wait.
I love this country.
Okay, well, so what? What does that make you a Republican? Jesus Christ. Come on, man. Get in the game. Just because you love the country, what do you love about the country? Do you love the hills and the valleys or do you love the people in political office?
Both.
All right, do you not understand? Now, wait a second. Do you not understand the difference between loving the country and loving the political system? Can you not make that distinction? Do you love the political system?
Yes.
You do? Then why aren't you participating?
I do participate.
Well, not if you live by a river.
No, I don't. That's
in a shack out in the woods? What the hell are you talking about? This
is
a consumer.
Camp. I have an apartment in town.
You have an apartment in town, too?
Yes. And I can go out to my camp with my sauna, my camper. I can fish, I can enjoy nature, and not too much.
I got to ask you, Ron. Why did you call me tonight? What is the point of this phone call?
Because I'm not a coward, and I love this country, and I also believe that the cowards are the liberals, people that are afraid of having other points of view that want to endorse the fairness doctrine. That to me is cowardice.
Oh Jesus! Oh my God! Oh my God! Why? You're all over the map. What the hell are you talking about? This is crazy talk, Ron. You live out by the river, and you obviously have been eating too many mushrooms, back off a little bit. I mean, I'm all for getting inside your head, but Jesus Christ, man, give it a break. Chase it with some coffee or something to take the edge off.
I'm going to get in his head. I think you're going to have to get in line. Sounds like there are a few voices operating in
there
already.
What was that call about? I have no idea.
I got a cell phone, okay?
I try to be nice. I try to be understanding. And it never works. I'm a Republican.
I can be poor and love my country, and hey, I'm a Republican.
Oh, my
God. Well, I'm trying to figure out what the fairness doctrine had to do with the call.
I have no idea. I guess he's bought into the Rush Limbaugh stuff. He obviously has a radio, too. That the reinstitution of the fairness doctrine would be the death of conservative talk radio. Jesus Christ Almighty, Ron, grow up. Before the hour. Oh, God.
I just have one more thing to say about just on the subject of the fairness doctrine that seems to be the big booger bear that all the right-wing talk show hosts are.
Aren't they terrified? Oh, my God.
I just want to know, what are they afraid of? I mean, it's not going to come back, all right, ever.
Right.
But let's just pretend for a fantasy minute that it was. What's so scary about a little balance?
The right-wingers on radio who are making an issue about this, they know damn good and well it's not coming back. But this is one of those straw men that that they put out there for the sake of the brain dead, you know, the people who are such willing participants in being told, this thing's going to get you! When there's really no thing there at all. You know, Al Gore's going to take away your guns. The liberals want to end conservative talk radio. I mean, it just goes on and on. They're trying to take a Christmas away. They're telling people in the department stores, they can't say Merry Christmas. I mean... This is the kind of dreck, garbage, slop that the right-wing talk show hosts and television thugs play to. I mean, they play to people who eat that stuff, who open their mouths while the right-wingers pour swill and garbage into their right down their gullets. It's insane. Anybody but a gibbering freak would no more think that such a thing as the so-called fairness doctrine could be reinstated than you could strike a match on a wet cake of soap. But these are Republicans, conservatives out there in radio land. And apparently they have lots of time to be terror. You know, the guy that calls in said, well, I'm not a coward. Yes, you are. Jesus Christ, you just don't realize it. You're afraid of your own shadow. All of you right-wingers are. You're terrified that some big, badass liberal is going to jump out of the bushes and take away your gun, take away your right-wing talk radio, make your old lady have an abortion, educate your child in a government school. You're all cowards. Every one of you. That's what a Republican is. That's what a conservative is. Terrified. And the specter of reinstituting the Fairness Doctrine is just the latest. It doesn't mean anything. But isn't it funny how Republicans are always terrified of something that has the word fairness in it? Ooh. Back to your phone calls. Jesus Christ, some of these people turn my stomach. Larry is calling from New York City, listening on the Internet. Of course, we're not on the air in New York City because it's such a bastion of conservative thought. Right, Larry?
Larry, yeah. Is this Mike?
Yeah, it's Mike.
Mike, I've been listening to you for 5 years and better.
Yeah.
Since your days on IE Radio and going through Air America until coming to Nova M.
Right.
And I find myself so many times listening to you, and before you come out with the word, I say it myself, and I find myself totally in agreement with you with most of the things you've said. I even like your taste of music, the Moody Blues. And
Well, listen, be careful of that, okay?
Why?
Well, because, I don't know, just, you know, just if we're
Mike,
on the if we're on the same wavelength, okay, but, you know, watch out. You might end up like me.
Well, I think I'm already there. I'm 61 years old. I'm a retired New York City school teacher. I've been in the 60s. I was protesting the war in Vietnam.
And you're 61?
I'm 61.
My God, you sound like you're like maybe 25.
Huh?
You sound very young.
Oh, I sound young, but I'm 61 years old, yeah.
Yeah, well, good for you.
And I went through the Vietnam War and, you know, protesting it from my college, and I remember Kent State and all those other things.
Yeah, yeah.
But while waiting to get on the air
for
like almost an hour, I think it is, you started touching on a few things that also touched me about the economy.
Yeah.
And the extent of which, how bad it really is. There is a website called Information Liberation. And on this website, there was a populist lawyer by the name of Gary Fielder who put up a video that you can get in Google Video. It's called The Gig is Up, Money, the Federal Reserve, and You.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about the extent of the debt that the United States is in. It talks about how the Federal Reserve creates money out of nothing and how most people don't understand what money is and what its purpose is. And then it goes on to talk about what's going on in the last couple of months. It talks about these credit default swaps, which were these insurance policies that these guys...
That the gamblers took out, right?
Right, exactly, that the gamblers took out. It's a casino capitalism.
That's it.
Even you calling it a Ponzi scheme, the whole entire market itself is not functioning the way it was supposed to, intended to, years and years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's become this whole game that they played, and it is a Ponzi scheme. And it's not just the isolated cases, the whole entire system. I watch CNBC sometimes, and all these guys, they talk about liquidity. When they're talking about things like liquidity, they're talking about making more and more money, which they're making out of air.
Right.
And we're like chasing our tail. We're never, you know, the real basic issue and fact about what's going on with this crisis and everything with the credit markets and everything that's going on is the fact that the only way we create money is when we create debt. But what happens as a result of this debt is that there's the interest. There isn't enough money to pay back what we have, so we just keep increasing the currency and increasing the currency. That's bad enough. But ever since Clinton, and I agree with you, I thought it was the only one who said this. I thought Clinton was the best Republican president we've had in this decade, in this century, in the 20th century.
In forever, sure.
And I wonder how many people are aware of the fact that it was Bill Clinton who helped pass the new Monetization Act at the end of his presidency, which allowed all of these people to start all this really Ponzi scheme that was going on since 89 until everything started to crash, almost 20 years later, with what's gone on since 2008, what happened in October, November.
Mm-hmm.
It's freezing up all the credit markets. But I've been listening to Tom Hartman, you, Randy Rhodes. These are the people that, you know, I've come to believe. And there's another guy out there. I'm sure you know him. His name is Kincaid. He's on Head On Radio.
Oh, yeah, Bob Kincaid. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He's about the only one that comes with the same kind of outrage and the same kind of anger that I hear in your voice at times and the same kind of concern.
Yeah.
When he was talking about what was going on in Gaza and in Israel,
right,
he was so upset just the way you were about
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah, he's excellent at what he does. I just wish there was some way, and there isn't right now, for this network to hire him.
He's tremendous.
Yeah,
I mean he really.
Maybe the next hire we make would be
he's
him.
He's very good. But originally, what I was going to talk about.
All right,
about,
quickly. I got to move on.
I know. I understand, Mike. I'm going to call you back eventually someday. I have so
okay.
much.
Go ahead.
But the original reason why I called was you were talking about right wing. Radio. I live here in New York, and there were three radio stations. I have ABC Radio, which is Sean Hannity. Then there's another radio
WOR,
W-O-R, and there's a new one called The Apple.
The Apple.
Which has William Bennett, and that's all you hear of these
voices. Why don't the people of New York demand something different? Come on. New Yorkers are New Yorkers. They're not like Atlantans or people in Kansas City. I mean, you know, we're sheep. But New Yorkers, why don't somebody call Michael Bloomberg and say, listen, do something? Not that he could, but I'm just saying, instead of just putting up with all this right-wing crap. Hey, listen, I got to leave it there, Larry. Thanks, man. I hope you call back again. We'll talk again, but I'm got to leave it there. New York City, Washington, D.C., nothing but right-wing deception, wall to wall, 24/7, constantly. San Francisco, for Christ's sake, has Mike Savage? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. For the hour, thanks to our crew, gathered together once again on a dark, cold winter's evening. Ian Huff, who engineered the program, Ben Birch, who is our technical advisor, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Bruce Enberg, who also advises this program in many ways. Our executive producer is Catherine Bay. Winding up a bit of the night here with something from Prairie 2. Who is writing in tonight, not with an economic thingy, but something a little bit different. The only one who mentioned this tonight is Kate in the desert, so she'll appreciate this. Prairie 2 writes, ripples of change in the subject line. He writes, the music died and yet it lived. You never know when a trend will start, when an idea will catch on, which little ripple will turn into an unstoppable wave. There's a cornfield in northern Iowa. It's no different from countless other cornfields on any back road. They say not a day goes by that people don't drive out to this remote stretch and just look at it. There's nothing there to see. Just corn stalks and snow. At night, you can see the flash of a small airport beacon in the distance. 50 years ago tonight, it was the place where the music died. Three musicians who played that new rock and roll and their pilot hit the ground at 170 miles an hour, and it was over in an instant. Of course, we know the little ripple that had been started by Buddy Holly's music grew and evolved, becoming the anthem for a generation who believe in change and equality and an end to war. Right-wingers tried to stamp it out, called it subversive and communist. When Interior Secretary James Watt tried to ban it from the Capitol Mall on the 4th of July, you know, subversive communist rock and roll, the outcry forced President Reagan to intervene and declare that he was a fan too. Yeah, right. In communist countries, they really tried to stamp it out. You could go to the gulag for listening to it, but it grew and it spread, and a generation taught to hate the West found they had common ground in peace and love, decadent Western values. In the former Soviet Union, they remembered Ronald Reagan as a crazy cowboy who nearly ended the world. When the Berlin Wall came down, they played rock and roll. Iowa has had better moments since 1959, like the little ripple of change started just 13 months ago that became President of the United States, Barack Obama. Yeah, 50 years ago. Somebody said to me one time, time just rips by when you're having fun, doesn't it? Oil Man Rick is calling from Houston, Texas. Oil Man Rick? All right, Rick.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Hey, it's Clunker right along.
Well, you know, I've been listening to your show, and you sound kind of depressed.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh,
all
no.
Your callers.
Oh, no, depressed. I'm happy as a pig in slop.
Well, you know, I think you guys don't know what to do. You won, and now the reality has hit you in the face.
Well, let me tell you something, Rick. Let me clue you in here. Regardless of what you might think, sport, the political system in this country is not a contest. Now, I realize that people like you, and I say like you because it's evidenced by your phone call. Wait a minute. People like you, as evidenced by your phone call, people like you believe that politics is some kind of a zero-sum sport, like the Rose Bowl. Like the Super Bowl. And it's not, Rick. It's not a zero-sum game. Politics, when you say you guys won, what the hell are you talking about? Don't answer. Nobody won, including you. When George Bush, your buddy down there in Texas, won, you lost. You may not realize it. You may have had a little fun, a little extra booze to drink, a little extra money in your kick, a little more hell raising to do. But let me tell you something, partner. You lost just as big time as anybody else in this country. So, tell you what, take your delusions somewhere else, all right? People like you kind of turn me off. You know what I'm saying? Thank you. Jesus Christ. Where do these people come from? Well, I guess I invite them to call in. But I'm still waiting for one of these guys to call in who is either A, not a sarcastic little twit, or B, who can define what a Republican is, or C, can make a coherent argument about anything. You know, Oil Man Rick is the type who is going to choke to death eventually on, you know, he's going to sink into a barrel of oil while it, you know, just clogs into his bronchial tubes and his gut. And he's going to think that everything's fine while he's smothering in oil or whatever. You know, not that I give a damn. Sorry, Rick. Nice try, but no cigar. Oil Man Rick. All right. There's a lot of people still holding on, want to get on the program tonight. I don't know why, but depressed? No, Rick. I'm fine, man. I'm doing just great, just like you are, you crazy, crazy old oil man, Rick, you.
I'm not sure sane people cannot react with a little bit of shock, if not depression, to the news when you consider the unemployment and Macy's.
No, that doesn't bother Rick. That doesn't bother Rick. No,
man.
No, that doesn't mean anything to Rick. You know, that's just a bunch of liberal whining. Doesn't mean a thing. That's not the real world. The real world is where Rick lives. That's the real world.
I wonder if he's fishing by the creek today.
No, Rick's out there making more money. That's where Rick lives, yeah. Because when the apocalypse hits, Rick knows where he's going to go to escape. Yeah, he does.
I'll see you tomorrow night, Two Seekers. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.